Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm so delighted to introduce Dr. David Carley. He is going to teach us all the things we need to know about platelet-rich plasma, how it's quantified, how we need to make it better for our patients. Welcome, David. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Dr. K. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you're all the way in Colorado, right?
So today in Vail, Colorado, which is where I practice.
David is an interventional pain specialist, and how many years have you been doing it?
So I think I'm about 22 years in, and about 14 years or so working with biologics and cell therapies.
And what kind of brought your interest into using PRP in your clinical practice?
Well, it's actually a bit of a funny story. So I played basketball in college and developed a knee problem that plagued me for years. In the very early days of PRP and biologic therapies, I was faced with a huge surgery or give PRP a try. And back then, it was snake oil, right? We really didn't know a whole lot about it. But I ended up treating my own knee because no one really knew how to do it, what to do. And I have a great picture of myself ultrasound guiding a needle into my own knee.
That sounds
And
crazy.
it does sound crazy. But no one else knew what to do. So I had to figure it out myself, as we have with so many things in this field. And sure enough, it worked. And that really solidified my interest in this space and a lot of research and development over the past 10, 12 years or so.
So now talk a little bit about when did biologics like PRP start becoming so popular in aesthetics? Of course, it was sort of pioneered in orthopedics and in athletes, but when did we start seeing it in aesthetics and what's driven the growth?
Well, even before orthopedics, there was some dental research that really spearheaded the very first applications of a simple platelet concentrate, right? Taking your platelets, concentrating them, and implanting them into gums. And that migrated into orthopedics. And I practice at a destination sports medicine clinic, so a lot of professional athletes and things of that nature. So when we started treating some of the pros, it ended up in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times and places like that. So the exposure really grew quite a bit. But the research was from the dental world and in a lot of animal models early on. And it kind of grew from there, and it's now expanding into many disciplines, including dermatology, plastic surgery, wound care, and some other applications as well. So the ways in which we can apply these natural healing mechanisms are pretty universal, but with some nuances that are interesting that we can talk about. We don't do it the same way at every single space.
And have you used stem cell growth factors in terms of actual stem cells, mesenchymal, fat-derived, bone marrow-derived?
Yes, and one of the biggest learning curves has been to figure out where to use what in orthopedics, for example. So we historically have looked towards bone marrow to attain a patient's stem cells and other types of cells which promote healing and create them into a product that's very similar to PRP. And we can apply that in the right situation to an arthritic knee, for example. We've had good luck in treating that. We have to be a little careful with cell therapies because the FDA does have regulations that we need to follow to be compliant and to keep patients safe. So we have to follow those rules, and we've done so. There are other models that patients will hear about, but the ones that really are considered the safest are PRP and stem cells emanating from the bone marrow.
So research now is showing that PRP has definitive benefits for patients with hair loss, for dermal thickening when you have fine lines and skin atrophy, joints. Is there any area of the body that we're not going to use PRP? We're using it as an O shot for penile injections. I mean, literally everywhere.
I like to think of it this way. So blood keeps our bodies alive. If any tissue in your body lacks blood, it dies. It can't survive. So it's only natural that creating a product from blood can be applicable in many areas of our bodies that require blood to survive. And then transitioning that from just a survival mechanism to an actual treatment one, where we're using it to treat a problem, is just taking the body's natural healing capabilities and using it to our advantage. So it makes sense that the progression has come along as it has.
And then, are there areas that you think we need to push this field forward? Like, currently, people are using PRP office-based, and there are three or four bigger companies that have carrier tubes and gels and centrifuges that spin the product down. It's all very unstandardized and unstudied. And I'm just wondering, like, where's the regulation in this industry, and how does the patient know which way of harvesting and processing PRP is the safest and the best and the most active? How does the doctor know? How does the provider know?
Terrific question, and really why my company exists and what we set out to do a long time ago, over 10 years ago. I started out using a simple medical device that creates these products. But what was happening is the product was coming out and I didn't know exactly what was in it. And I was expected to make that problem better without having an understanding of what was in the product. So we set out to solve that problem many years ago. And it's since become an actual company where we measure every single cell that's in a PRP, for example. And then what we've done since then is to build a database that can look at those cells in the PRP, the concentration or the dose, if you will, and compare that to the patient's outcome, how they did with treatment. And by doing that over and over and over again in time and building the database, we can learn from it. These patients did well. What was it about their product in terms of the cell counts, for example, that might be a predictor of why they did well? Here were patients who failed therapy. Was it because their platelet count was too low, or was it a problem with the production of the biologic that may have led to a suboptimal outcome? It didn't work. So the only way I knew of to solve the problem and standardize the products was to think of them more like a drug. With a pill, you have a dose, right? A dose produces an effect. And if you don't get the effect, you change the dose perhaps. Mm-hmm. So we had to think about these cell therapies, which are complex, more like a drug. And the only way to do that was to first measure what was in them and study the measurement versus the outcome.
And what, so your company is called Grayledge. Well, how long have you been around? And you're the CEO, founder, and everything. How long have you been in business for?
So Grayledge was founded in 2010. And it was initially just a resource for my practice and our hospital. I practice at the Stedman Clinic in Vail, Colorado. And over time, we have a lot of visiting doctors, like a lot of us do. And doctors were saying, hey, we really like that idea. We'd love to be able to do the same thing. We're interested in biologics and PRP. So we had to figure out how to turn it from just a resource into a company, which is what we've done over the past 10 years. And we wanted to make sure we were doing it right. So we registered the company with the FDA. And when you do that, you invite them in to audit you to make sure that you're in compliance with what they expect and that we're doing things right. So it was a lot of work, as you can imagine. That's not easy to create an FDA audited process. And it's taken 10 years really to evolve to the point where we can put this now in many states and different specialties like dermatology and plastic surgery and orthopedics and others. Because it's like McDonald's. The McDonald's you eat in Los Angeles tastes exactly like the hamburger at McDonald's you eat in Denver. Okay, yes. We had to think about it like that. We wanted the exact same product to be produced at each one of these labs so that we could compare apples to apples, right? When we look at the data that we're producing from each particular doctor and each particular lab.
Mm-hmm. So current processing really doesn't have quality control or kind of quantitative metrics. And we don't even know like if we're starting with the patient who has a low platelet count to begin with, because we typically don't draw their blood and send in a CBC and see that it's all normal. And I suppose that we really should do that to begin with. But how do you propose with Grayledge technology to kind of standardize and figure out what we're doing and seeing?
Well, the first part of it is observational. Mm-hmm. And then we study the outcome. And as we learn where that particular platelet count works and doesn't work, you start to modify it. So over time, as we learn and we change our protocols, we want to get to the point where we treat Dr. K for her knee problem one way, and you treat Dr. Carly with his shoulder problem a different way, because we're not the same person. We may have a different platelet count to start with. Our platelets may not work exactly the same. So a 75-year-old smoker, we might treat differently than a 23-year-old pro athlete. A face, we might treat different than a knee. So the only way to get to the point where we can customize the biologic to give the best chance for success for a particular problem is to study those concentration and outcome effects and learn over time what works best. And then once you know what works best, you want to make that product that we know works best every time for that patient and that problem. And that's where we're driving towards.
And is that generally true that an older patient, you probably need to draw more blood when you're doing PRP harvest? Or are there any generalities that you can speak to in what you've seen so far? How many patients have you studied with this technology?
Well, we've treated probably over 13,000 over 10 years. Not all of them have been involved in formal study, but we've been tracking the production of it, right? The production of the biologics of the cell counts and so forth. and refining that process. To answer your question, and it's a great question, and one I get asked all the time more about stem cells as opposed to platelets, but it's applicable. There does seem to be somewhat of a drop off as we age with our stem cell counts and potentially with our platelet counts, but it's not as significant as we had originally thought. There's a lot of data and research now that shows I don't get 23-year-old patients with knee arthritis, right? They're all 60 and 70 years old. So we're building quite a bit of data in an older population, right, over 60, that shows that when we process and concentrate their platelets or their cells in the stem cell case, that they work just fine. So we're able to overcome natural decreases with age simply by concentrating more. But for example, if someone has less cells or less platelets, we just draw more blood and increase the platelet count in our product. And those are the types of relationships and associations we'll learn over time and be able to adjust. So that age isn't the issue anymore. It's more health, right? A healthy 70-year-old is different from a 50-year-old with poorly controlled diabetes. And we don't treat them the same way. And those are the associations that we're learning in time.
So some of the products that are out there on the market, are there products that you would recommend for injectors who are listening? Do you feel that there's certain harvesting products that make, you know, better results possible?
Well, you know, in your field, a lot of times it's combination therapies where there's a filler, for example, as well as a biologic. In terms of the biologic, I like to keep it simple. And my question to doctors or injectors is, do you know what's in there? Mm-hmm. Let's start with that. And in very few cases, probably 99% of the biologic therapies that are performed across the world every day, we don't know.
Yeah. No, and the companies keep it a secret. It's proprietary information, although it's probably, you know, calcium citrate and like.
Now, that said, the general trend is that these things do work, right? Otherwise, they probably would have gone away a long time ago. Our goal with GrayLedge is, okay, that's great. The trend is that they're helpful. How do we make it better? How do we improve it over time? And the only way to do that is through this rigorous study in a learning model where we're constantly getting information that can help us to refine the product. So in one of your facial cases, we eventually want to be able to make the product that we know gives a 90% chance of success, right? Based on data. Mm-hmm. And it takes a long time to get to that point, but the only way to do it is to create the model that we've developed and then research it and get as many patients into that study as possible and then apply what we learn.
So these kits can be so costly and expensive. And is there truly a difference between just drawing up blood and spinning it in a blue top tube and a centrifuge and double spinning it and harvesting that product versus using an expensive tube that's lined with unknown entities?
The answer is yes.
Supposedly to concentrate the platelets and give you even more growth factor release.
Sure. The answer is yes. And I'll say that with an asterisk, right? My company does this, obviously. So perhaps there's an element of bias to that. Other companies may have a different opinion. If you don't know, we have to make a presumption that that PRP sample is good. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example as to how it may not be good. Often those samples clot. If the sample clots, the platelet count goes almost to zero. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer a PRP, and you can't see this with the naked eye. So you don't actually know in a machine or a little device that has happened in every case. That's just one example. There are many examples like that. And if we don't create a way to build in quality control to show that this sample is good, then it's just a presumption. Maybe it works and the patient's happy. Maybe it doesn't. But if it doesn't work and the standard wasn't optimal, then PRP didn't work. Mm-hmm. But it's not that PRP didn't work. It's that the sample was no good. And we could have been able to identify that before the patient spent their money on the treatment only to get a suboptimal product.
Right. So that brings up my next question. So when there is a clot, we hear more and more these days about using PRF or platelet-rich fibrin. In some cases, we are advocating the early formation of an early clot in order to make the platelets aggregate and release more of their cytokines and growth factors. So do you believe in PRF? Do you prefer PRP?
I didn't say when it clots that it was bad. We don't know the answer, right? So all I said is if it clots, it's not PRP.
Right.
So PRF is, it's a type of PRP, but it's less concentrated basically. So you centrifuge it to remove the red blood cells and what's left is PRF basically. So there are platelets and white blood cells and proteins, and an important protein that acts as a filler for your field, for example, that is felt has more utility than PRP. Now, I looked at their studies a little bit with PRF before I got on the podcast just to familiarize myself a bit more. And it's kind of interesting because the same things that, so what's the advantage of PRF? The advantage that's stated in PRF is that it releases the growth factors over a longer period of time because they get caught in the clot, right? Because it clots after it's injected and they're released more slowly. But we can clot a PRP sample too. So you can do the same thing with PRP with a higher platelet count. So which is better? Time will tell. I think both have potential utility. There's only a couple of studies right now looking at one versus the other, and they're all in test tube. They're in vitro studies, meaning they're not in the body. So we always have to, as you know, have to translate what we learn in the lab to what actually happens in the body. Mm-hmm. So I think the verdict is out as to if PRF is truly better or is useful in a certain application and is better than PRP. Maybe PRP is better in another application. But the only way to do that is, again, to go back to the basics, what's in the PRF? No one's ever measured anything in the PRF in terms of basic cell counts. So we can apply the same thinking that we have done with PRP or a stem cell concentrate to PRF and study the cell counts and outcomes. And then do what we call comparative modeling. So you treat some patients with PRF, and you treat some patients with PRP, and you measure the counts and everything that's in them, and you compare who does better. And that's how we learn which is better for what application.
That's interesting because people are very vocal about, if you're in the PRF camp, you are very vocal about the fact that you think that that is the winning product to use. And if you're in the PRP camp, you say that that's most effective, but we truly don't have that many studies that differentiate them.
That same argument wages in the stem cell world, looking at fat-derived stem cells versus bone marrow-derived stem cells. And the same problem exists. The people who like fat-derived stem cells say theirs works better. The people who like marrow-derived stem cells say theirs work better. But there's very little data comparing the two in matched patients.
Yeah, so you'd have to do a split-face study where you treated one side of the face with PRF and the other side with PRP. I don't even know that that's been done ever. I doubt it. But right. It would be a good one.
It would be a good one. And then if you add the cell counts on top of it, it adds that much more value because it's not just is PRP or PRF better, but why is it better?
That's
so
true.
That the why piece is what we're really driving towards, not just is it better, but why is it better? So that if you understand why, then you can reproduce it and you can duplicate it over and over and over again.
When the platelets bind to, you know, each other, they release granules. And these are the products like platelet-derived growth factors and stem cell growth factors that are going to activate and improve cellular function. Do you have a specific count of what you think to be effective? I've heard numbers that a PRP platelet count of 1 million per ml is therapeutic and what we should be striving for. Is that accurate?
In my opinion, no. And this is why. So that number, 1 million platelets per microliter, was determined about 10 years ago based on platelet concentration inducing bone growth in culture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we think about a PRP, there's a concentration of platelets in the PRP, but then there's a volume of that PRP that was injected or implanted into the patient. The concentration of the PRP isn't as important as the total number of platelets that we inject, which is the concentration times the volume.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get away from this idea of there's an optimal concentration and towards this idea of what's the dose or the number of platelets that we apply to a problem, because it's the dose, not the concentration. And I'll give you an example. 1 million platelets per microliter and 2 milliliters injected into the head for hair is different than 1 million platelets per microliter and 20 milliliters of PRP injected into the hair. Obviously, quite a few more platelets injected with 10 times the amount of PRP. Both had the same concentration. Both were not the same treatments.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to get people away from the idea of an optimal concentration and towards the idea of an optimal dose or the total number of units, stem cells, platelets, white blood cells, et cetera, that were injected into a particular problem.
Interesting. And then if you inject more volume of plasma with that platelet growth factors, does that dilute it to some extent? Do you have some dilutional effect and you need to hyperconcentrate the PRP for it to work best at the follicles?
Maybe. We don't know yet. And it's a great question and one that deserves research. So again, we have some guidance. So 1 million platelets per microliter is a good place to start. And then we can just calculate the total number based on how much we use. Okay, we start there. And then you start to track the outcomes based on that and you adjust. So we can increase the platelet count or we can decrease it, but that's the concentration. What I want to know in your facial is how many total platelets did you apply and what was the outcome of the total number of platelets? Okay. And you can do half face studies. So you can do, 8 billion, platelets on one half of the face and 11 trillion platelets on the other. And those are the kind of numbers we're talking about, Dr. K. They're huge, huge numbers. Okay, these are tiny, tiny structures. So it gets to be, complex math, but it can be done with databases and software that do all this work for us.
Now, how does your equipment work? Does that counting process and checking the analysis of the sample occur on site, or do you guys send that out? Does it take a long time? It must be fairly quick.
It's done before the patient's treated. And we wanted to do it that way because the other thing we're driving towards is as we learn, to optimize a sample for a problem, a facial, for example, what's the optimal platelet concentration or platelet dose? Then we want to be able to make sure once we learn that, that every single one we make is optimized to give that patient the best chance for a good outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't do us any good to learn after the fact.
Right? Yeah.
Because we want a decision point for the doctor to say, doctor, this is a good sample, go ahead. Or doctor, we need to draw some more blood. That platelet count is too low. We need to get it up higher before you treat that patient. And that's what we're driving towards. If patients spend, in ortho, for example, a patient might spend $2,000-$3,000 for a PRP treatment. Well, if they're going to spend that kind of hard-earned money, we are obligated, in my opinion, to give them the best chance for success by making them the best product that data shows gives them the best chance for success. Mm-hmm. And that's the system that we've designed. And then now we want to apply it to other disciplines like plastic surgery and dermatology, et cetera. And try to learn the same things to improve what we do.
Interesting. So when you look at plastic surgery studies, you must kind of just laugh because they use like 25 to 50 patients to determine their analysis and to look at statistics and to make inferences about, do these things really work biologically? And that's looking at a very small sample size. What do you think is the proper sample size? And how should we design some studies going forward?
Well, that's why we created a database or a registry. It's often called. So Greyledge's mission is, and it's an impossible goal, but it's our goal anyway, to study every single patient we treat, right? Now that's never going to happen, but it's our goal. So to answer your question, orthopedics is no better. Most of the studies in orthopedics are ends of 20 or 30 or 50, maybe 100 if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
We want to generate ends of 5,000 and study that data. Prospectively, we're not randomizing and controlling and doing all that. But to truly observe a trend that's statistically relevant, the bigger the number, the bigger the potential statistical significance. Then once you observe a real trend with a lot of patients, 500 or 2,000, then you can scale that back and do a more focused study with controls and randomization and things of that nature to prove the point. But when we try to observe trends from a study of 25 patients and apply that to the entire field, no, in my opinion, that's inadequate. But that's all we have to go on right now until we figure out a better way.
Yeah,
so we
when
have
I
to
first
do the best.
I started doing PRP maybe 5 years ago. And then that was my first inclination. I was like, well, how do I do this? I read the top 15 to 20 articles that were published in the last 5 years and kind of looked at each technique and each article and what they recommended and kind of came up with a protocol of a double spin, a cold temperature, the centrifuge speed matters and maintaining your platelet integrity and viability. And it's so many factors, and I feel like I've been as conscientious as I possibly could be by reviewing and coming up with these protocols, but many people out there, and I wanted to speak to the consumer, are not doing that, and they're drawing your blood like they would for a normal blood test, and they're spinning it in a blue top tube, just normal, and they're actually injecting the plasma layer. They're not really even aware of the proper layer to be injecting out of the tube, so Just want to caution everybody, like what you see on Instagram, of course, you need to be careful. The vampire lift is not the same thing as PRP. Using the plasma, the yellow layer is not the same thing. The yellow layer is important, but we're wanting to, you know, precipitate down the platelets and take the buffy coat and take the actual active layer. So do you have any advice for the consumer who's already out there, already getting these things done?
Yeah, and it's really hard for them because there's just so much information from stem cell therapies to PRPs to a variety of other things, exosome therapies, and lots and lots and lots of things. So two pieces of advice I think that are practical. One is be forthright with your doctor. Doc, if you're going to do a PRP on me, do you know what the cell counts are? It's okay to ask them, right?
Yeah.
And most of them will say no.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you shouldn't necessarily treat, but if we reinforce the message with docs, Dr. K, I've been lecturing about this for 10 years on podiums.
Yeah.
But only now is the culture of physicians starting to call for an improved standardization. So it just took that long for physician culture to change. But patients drive in part what doctors do. So if patients are educated consumers, it pushes us to be better. So patients know what to ask for. In orthopedics, for example, a patient would ask, doctor, are you going to guide that injection into my joint or are you going to do it blindly? Okay. Mm-hmm. Guidance is good, right? We can see, confirm that we get it where we want to. It's just one example of there's so much information you can learn about, but stick to the basics. If you're going to inject me with my platelets, how many platelets are in there? Mm-hmm. Do you know what the best plate number of platelets is?
Yeah.
And ask those kinds of questions. Of course, how many have you done? What are your success rates? Are you tracking your outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
Are you measuring your success rates or are you just kind of guessing? Okay, these are all great questions and fair questions, in my opinion, for patients to ask. And if your doc's truthful, then you make an educated decision based on what they tell you. So if the doctor doesn't know, for example, maybe you get a great PRP, maybe you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's your money and you have to look at the likelihood of a return on your investment.
Mm-hmm.
So the more the doc knows, the more they can reassure you or have a confidence level that the procedure will give you a better chance for success. When I treat a patient, every single patient I treat hears, here's what we know from research. Here's what we know just from anecdotally from doing this for many, many years. It's possible it won't work. It's possible. But if we do our good job educating you and make a good decision, then we won't do it if our confidence level isn't reasonable that you're going to get a good outcome and your money's reasonably well spent. No outcome is going to be 100%. But in knee treatments, knee stem cell treatments with bone marrow, for example, the response rate is very high. Probably 80 to 85% of patients get a positive outcome. What we don't know is who do we hit a home run with and who do we hit a double with,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have the, my God, this is fantastic. Thank you so much. It's wonderful. And you have, I'm better. I'm not perfect, but I am better. So the question is, does your treatment make you good enough? So our world is a little different than yours, where it's more of a, it's an aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of how I look. But the end point is the same. If you're going to spend your money and go to a, you know, well-regarded thought leader plastic surgeon like Dr. K, then you expect that Dr. K is going to give you a better chance for success.
So anything we can do, but it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge because you don't have tools. You're trying to follow these protocols. You've looked at all the ways that 20 other groups are doing things, and then you pick and choose what you want to include. But that's the challenge of the field. And the stem cell challenge is even bigger. Like, I think, you know, patients sometimes are being sold much more than is possible with stem cells. And it really depends on where they're harvested from and the concentration of stem cells harvested. Are you using any new techniques with bone marrow or pluripotent stem cells that you could chat about?
Well, again, we're regulated in that space and what we can and can't do. So we have to do what's called a point of care treatment, meaning we harvest some blood from the bone marrow cavity, for example, concentrate it in our laboratory, and then immediately put it back into the patient. So we can't grow more. We can't alter them in any way.
Mm.
We can't genetically change them or do things like that. We also can't, Dr. K, put someone else's stem cells into you. And there are clinics and models out there which are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That is considered a biological drug, and that requires an FDA approval process. And to my knowledge, there are no products from someone else that are FDA approved for use in the United States today.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at this, if you want to know what is legal and safe outside of a clinical trial, it's your cells, your PRP, or your bone marrow applied to you. Anything else, if it's not part of a clinical trial, technically is not compliant with the FDA's standards. And we cannot, in those situations, guarantee your safety.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it won't work. It doesn't mean we can't guarantee you're going to be safe.
I think the consumer just has to be very careful, because there's nothing very, very carefully regulated. It's all done under cloak and dagger circumstances. And sometimes it pushes the envelope of what's legal and what's safe even.
Why we want to study everyone. If your doctor is at least tracking outcomes or cares about whether PRP works or not, in this particular, we're talking about PRP, it's at least a good sign, right? Yeah. If your doctor doesn't care and is just following, you know, research studies with patient numbers of 25, it's not as good in my opinion. So with a new innovative cutting edge therapy, we want to push the limits of innovation. We want to be cutting edge, but our Hippocratic Oath says, first, don't cause any problems.
Right.
Like, cause more problems than you solve.
Exactly. And
in industry where we work, we don't like following the FDA's rules, but they exist for a reason, and they exist to keep patients safe.
Right.
So if we follow those rules, then at least we can tell you we're not going to hurt you, or there's a very, very low likelihood that we're going to hurt you based on what we know in the risks and informed consent. Wow. So it's a very tricky world, very, very tricky from the patient standpoint.
Well, I think you're doing great work, and it's really refreshing to talk to someone who wants to push the envelope, doing the right thing for the patient and for the field, actually, for this regenerative medicine field to grow. We are going to need more standardized studies and trials and things that really look carefully and conscientiously at quantities and quality metrics and standardization of protocols, and like making sure that you're comparing apples to apples, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
apples comparison. We can't learn from center to center if we're not making the same product.
Exactly. So that's
a great analogy, and one that I use all the time, Dr. K.
For injectors out there who are listening, who might be using the various technologies around, like the Eclipse and there's like 20 different companies where you can buy test tubes and centrifuges that spin and do things. Are there any that you think are doing it better than others, other than your system?
What we're finding, and without naming any specific systems, what we're finding when we're testing against them, because we'll do split tests with machines pretty frequently, it's not that they're good nor bad, it's they're variable. They're mm-hmm. all over the place. So if you take 10 different patients, you're going to get 10 totally different PRPs, okay? Mm-hmm.
With one brand. Yeah.
Much less different brands. And mm-hmm. then if we try to look at data, well, this study used that device and this study used that device, and no one measured anything at all, so which is better?
Yeah.
So as a general rule, most systems do concentrate platelets above baseline. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. But in terms of standardization or quantification or dose response relationships, all the things we've talked about tonight, none of them have any data to show that one is clearly superior to the other. So what docs have done, knowing that there's not much difference, is they often go with the one that's the cheapest.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that makes sense. If you follow the right steps, these things don't need to be so expensive. It's really science. I think this is so fascinating. Where can people learn more about GrayLedge and your technology that you're developing?
Sure. So our website is GrayLedgeBiotech.com. GrayLedgeBiotech.com.
Wonderful. And your Instagram for people to connect?
Just my name, David Carley, K-A-R-L-I. At David Carley for Instagram and LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, I can't wait to meet you if you're coming out to California. And I think we do need to push the envelope and have more standardization for platelet-rich plasma, platelet-rich fibrin, regenerative stem cells, everything. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. That's where you can find me doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. You can find my Transform Stem Cell Growth Factor, a topical application of human-based peptides that's really good for your skin. And that's where you'll find it. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.